Peace be with you. Friends, on this fourth Sunday of Easter, we have this marvelous, short but very punchy reading from the Gospel of John. Jesus referring to himself as the Good Shepherd. Now listen, "My sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me." Well, this trope of the shepherd might be alien to a lot of us today, but man, is it powerful and consistent in the Bible, both Old Testament and New. The shepherd who calls out the sheep, even though they're kind of dumb animals, but they are able to discern the voice of the shepherd. And the shepherd knows which sheep belong to him. So it was a very apt metaphor for the manner in which God, Christ, reaches out to us, knows us personally, and how we, and this is the part I find really interesting and mysterious, we're able, even though we're kind of dumb animals too, you know, let's be honest, but we're able to discern amidst all the competing voices, his voice, that's the one we are to follow. I say mysterious because, you know, why do we end up following Christ, those of us who do? What is it? And you say, oh, it's your family, it's your background. Yeah, sure, all that contributes. But at some point, we found that voice compelling. At some level, we said, a lot of voices, I hear a lot of voices, but that's the one I'm going to follow. And that's the Christian life. Now, the claim of the New Testament is that everybody is meant to follow that voice. Jesus is not just, you know, one interesting figure among many. Like, oh, that's nice. He's got, you know, a few million followers, but lots of other spiritual gurus have their followers. And, you know, there's this shepherd and that shepherd. No, no. I am the good shepherd, Jesus says. I am the good shepherd. And the will of God is that everyone hears his voice. Everyone follows him. Now, look at the first couple readings for this Sunday. The first one from the Acts of the Apostles. That's the whole point of the Acts of the Apostles, is the apostles, apostelein means to send, they've been sent out by Christ under now the power of the Holy Spirit to gather in the nations. Now, I know in the beginning they were a very small band of people making their way around the eastern end of the Mediterranean. Nevertheless, they knew that was their purpose. The prime example, of course, is Paul. Paul, who as a student under Gamaliel would have known all the great Old Testament texts about the nations streaming toward Jerusalem, that the purpose of Israel ultimately was to gather in the nations. Now you understand his mission. Having seen the risen Christ and discerned, yes, indeed, that's the shepherd. Having heard his voice, Paul says, I want that voice to go out to the ends of the world. That's why when Paul says, I want to go to Rome, but then even beyond that, I want to go to Spain. And for him, that meant as far as you could go. I want to go to the ends of the world so that everybody might hear the voice. And that's exactly what he's doing here, is going outside of a Jewish ambit into the Gentile world. Well, look, all of us, we're descendants of this move of Paul, that Gentiles began to hear the voice, and so we've heard the voice. And then from the book of Revelation, this marvelous vision. Listen, I, John, had a vision of a great multitude which no one could count from every nation, race, people, and tongue. They stood before the throne and before the Lamb. Well, what is that? But an image of, well, heaven ultimately, but it's an image of the church. From every nation, from every people, hearing the voice of the shepherd, they came. That's the church. That's evangelization. That's the whole point of the operation, is to bring people to the voice of the shepherd. Now, so here's the question for us today. You say, okay, I get all that. But how do you hear the voice of the shepherd? I understand there's sheep and there's the shepherd literally speaking his voice. I understand even followers of Jesus, and they heard him and but what about us? How do we hear that voice? Well, there are a lot of ways. You know, through the teaching of the church, that's true. Through the witness of the saints, yeah, sure. Through the sacraments, the Eucharist, yeah. Through good, compelling preaching, mm-hmm. Those are all ways that the shepherd speaks. He uses secondary causes, right? And we hear his voice echoing there. But I wonder this, if the clearest way that we hear the voice of the shepherd isn't through the conscience, It was John Henry Newman, one of my great theological heroes, who referred to the conscience as, in his remarkable language, the aboriginal vicar of Christ in the soul. Now, Newman knew, once he became a Catholic, he knew, well, the Pope, yes, indeed, is the vicar of Christ. The Pope is someone who represents and stands in for Christ. And yes, indeed, in the authoritative teaching of the Pope, we can hear an echo of the shepherd's voice. But isn't it interesting? Newman felt that the more fundamental, more aboriginal vicar of Christ is the conscience. In the voice of the conscience, we hear the voice of the shepherd. Now, what's the conscience calling us to? Well, to moral virtue, to do the right thing, to walk the right path. In Thomas Aquinas' language, to do good and to avoid evil. And the conscience is the voice that directs us. Okay, a lot of skeptics around today. Try talking, by the way, in the public forum about morality, and you're going to hear every one of these skeptical voices. But a lot of skeptics today, they'll say, oh, come on, morality, it's just a matter of private opinion. Yeah, I think this is wrong, but you don't. You think it's right. And I think doing this thing is the right thing to do. And you say, no, no, that's the wrong thing to do. And you know what? Live and let live. We live in a diverse, sort of inclusive world. And so I tolerate you and you should tolerate me. Morality is just kind of a matter of private opinion. But can this be right? Scratch the surface of anyone's consciousness here. Ask just a few probing questions, and you'll find that kind of subjectivism and relativism no one really takes seriously. I'll give you an example. You know what? I think slavery is a terrible thing, but that's just my private opinion. You know, if you think it's okay, that's, well, who am I to tell you what to do? There were a lot of, you know, responsible people in the mid-19th century in our country thought slavery was fine, and, well, it's, you know, their opinion. I happen to think it's wrong, but, you know, I'm not going to impose my view on you. You know, I think being abusive toward women or children, well, I think that's wrong, but, you know, maybe you don't. And maybe in your culture, it's a different thing. And who am I to judge? Well, come on. Does anyone take that seriously? See, once you probe a little bit, I find most people on the hard left in our culture, they have very strong views about the objectivity of morality. No, these things aren't just private opinion. These things are objectively right or wrong, okay? Second theory, you hear this one a lot. Yeah, you know, it's not just so much private opinion, but it's cultural consensus. So why do we say something is wrong? Well, because there's kind of a consensus of the culture around a given issue. So let's say abortion in our country. Well, there's kind of a consensus. If you did a public opinion poll, probably a consensus that, you know, maybe some abortions are bad, but, you know, a lot of them are permissible, and we should just accept that. I shouldn't be imposing my private view, but, you know, let the culture kind of come to a consensus. Well, is that going to work? How about this? I'm a German circa 1935, and I say, I think we got to deal with this Jewish problem in our country. And I think Hitler, he's got it together because he's expressing a cultural consensus that indeed Jews are a problem and they should be rounded up and, I suppose, yeah, put into concentration camps and at the limit, killed. Was there a common view in Germany, 1935? You bet there was. There was a clear cultural consensus around that. Or bring it closer to home. Let's say you're in the deep south of our country, 1950. There's a very strong cultural consensus that Jim Crow laws are a good idea. You know, I mean, look, it's a matter of our culture to say that, you know, white people should be here and black people should be there, and that segregation is a good thing, and there should be separate, you know, drinking fountains and washrooms and separate restaurants and all that. And, you know, who are you to tell me that our culture has reached a consensus around this? You buy that? You find that persuasive? I don't know anyone who would say that, maybe that the rounding up of Jews in a concentration camp, well, maybe that's understandable. No, it's a moral outrage. It's objectively wrong in every possible way. I don't know anybody who would say, yeah, the Jim Crow laws in the Deep South 1950, they were okay, and they represented, you know, the cultural view. Come on. No serious person would hold to that. No, there's an objectivity. What Hitler did was objectively and in every way wrong. Jim Crow laws were objectively and in every way wrong. Here's a third one you hear a lot today. You get it in these debates with the new atheists is, you know, what we call morality, we think it's objective. No, no, it's just a matter of evolution. So it's a byproduct of the evolutionary process. As we've evolved, you know, being altruistic and compassionate and caring for others, that was a better way for the tribe or the society or the species to survive. And so it's just sort of an epiphenomenon of the evolutionary process. I mean, even as I say that, I just think how stupid it is. And here's the basic problem. If you say morality has simply is a byproduct of evolution, well, who's to say it's not going to evolve in some other direction? So you say, well, why is slavery wrong? Well, because, you know, evolution has kind of taught us that. Well, evolution will go on. Evolution will continue. And who's to say it's not going to end up teaching us that slavery is a good thing? Abusing children. Well, I guess, yeah, evolution's taught us we shouldn't do that. Well, what if evolution continues and it teaches us we should do it? No, no. People recognize there's an objectivity to morality. Now, here's the point. And the conscience is that voice that directs us toward the objective good and away from the objectively bad. Yes, the aboriginal vicar of Christ in the soul that dictates to us this is the right path to take, that's the wrong path, that rewards us when we do the right thing, that punishes us when we do the wrong thing. When we've done something right, isn't it true, everybody? We have a very strong sense that we have pleased someone. When we do something wrong, we've got this sense that we have offended someone. Where does that come from? Two places. The objectivity of morality and from the presence of the conscience. So can I suggest hearing the voice of the shepherd? I can hear it many ways. But maybe the most primordial, basic, and infallible way that I hear the voice of the shepherd is through the voice of the conscience. Don't suppress it. Don't wish it away. Don't run from it. Don't cover it up with your addictions and all that. Those are all paths that we sinners take. Listen to it. Listen to it. Again, listen to the Lord. My sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me. The Lord Jesus Christ knows you. And his voice echoes in the depth of your soul through the conscience. Listen to him. Follow him. And God bless you.